This is The Science Show on RN. And meanwhile, at the Australian Museum, instead of resurrecting frogs, they're finding new ones, like the giant tree frog in Vietnam, discovered by Jody Rowley, just sitting there.
Well, the female's bigger than the male. She's about 9 or 10 centimetres long, so fits quite well in the palm of your hand. Apple green, bright apple green, white belly, yellowy gold eyes with a white iris and a creamy sort of white belly, huge hands and feet.
The hands are gigantic.
Enormous.
Yes.
With huge toe pads on them. And in between every toe and every finger is webbing all the way to the toe pads. So parachutes on the end of its arms and feet.
Now, when you first came across it, what did you see?
Well, I was conducting an amphibian survey with my colleagues about 90 kilometres from Ho Chi Minh City, quite disturbed evergreen forest, so crisscrossed with paths, buffalo, wallows, you'd run into people all the time. And I was actually really keen to get to the mountain where the forest was better. So I was like, oh, well, you just need to survey everywhere, so we'll survey here. And I wasn't actually expecting to find anything particularly interesting because in general, in the lowlands, you kind of get the sort of more common, widely distributed frogs. And then all of a sudden, at sort of about, I think about 10 p.m. at night, we come across a huge green frog just sitting on a log, it sounds like a nursery rhyme now, next to the path, just hanging out, just sitting there. And it tends to be the bigger tree frogs tend to be very relaxed. Maybe they don't have so many predators, and so they'll just sit there while you look at them. And she was gorgeous. At the time, I didn't think it was a new species. I thought that it was a previously described species, and it actually wasn't until a year later that I figured out, wait on, when I found this other species, those two things are not the same.
So you found one. Any more?
I found one over about 10 nights, and we didn't find any more at all. We found tons of other species, different kinds of frogs, but no more of that species. And actually it was my colleague, Dow, who was conducting her PhD, who found a little gathering of individuals at another site about 100 kilometres away, but another small patch of forest in the lowlands.
Was it a surprise to find such a large creature close to the city?
It was. You think that areas near the city are probably pretty well surveyed, especially as it's lowland. So usually I expect to, you know, hike for 3 days up a mountain, scale waterfalls, up to my ankles in mud to find something that no scientist has ever sort of seen before and described. And so it was kind of weird that we were about 10 minutes walk from a drink stand in the day, you know, and we find this huge big frog. But I guess in some aspects it's not surprising. The frog probably spends 95% of its time in the canopy 20 metres up, and I'm scared of heights, so I'm not likely to be looking for them up there. So you just have to be in the right place at the right time, and that's the rainy season when most sane people would not be in the forest in the pouring rain. When these guys come, they parachute out of the tree and breed in puddles.
And why would they need to be so large? I suppose you can be large if you want to be, if you've got fewer predators. But is it a surprise that they're so large?
There's other large flying frogs in Southeast Asia. The more webbed ones tend to be the bigger ones. So maybe it's kind of a thing, if you become bigger, you need really big hands and feet to make sure that you don't plop to the ground too fast.
Now, of course, the thing that you want to do, being from a museum and studying it, is to take one home, but then you've got to kill it. What did you do with the specimen?
I did take one back to the Australian Museum because it's impossible to prove that it's new, to describe it and then hopefully give it the protection that it deserves, or at least for people to know it's there before it's gone. So just because we only found a few, it doesn't mean that it's actually rare. There could be hundreds up in the canopy and you really just have to be there on one or two nights. So we did take a couple of individuals as specimens. We needed to measure the size of their toe pads, the distance between their eyeball and their nostril, everything about the frog, and then its DNA as well. So because the differences were relatively minor, to do with colour and webbing and skin flaps mostly, we had to compare the DNA of the new frog that we'd found with the frog that I'd previously got it confused. So I got DNA samples of the Rhacophorus keo, which was the previously described frog from China, Laos and Vietnam, and compared all of them to these new populations to provide more evidence that they were in fact new.
And what did you call it?
I called it Helen's flying frog, Rhacophorus helenae.
Why?
In honour of my mother, who supported her only child and daughter traipsing through the forests of Cambodia, Vietnam and China, just constantly supporting me. And recently, or at the time, she had been diagnosed with ovarian cancer. and I thought it was about time that I did something special to try and make her happy, and it certainly did. She was really pleased and honoured.
She doing well now?
She's going well. It's been over a year since she's had chemotherapy, so we're just fingers crossed, and she's awesome. So, yeah, I'm really pleased.
Now, Jodie, the last time I talked to you was about the vampire frog, and you've discovered this about a couple of years ago in the same sort of place. What next with the vampire?
Well, we've been doing a little bit of research on the tadpoles in particular, because the vampire flying frog was named in honour of the tadpoles, which had big black fangs sticking out of their mouth. And so we sort of hypothesised, why on earth would they do that? You know, it's pretty unlikely they're blood-sucking. So I collaborated with one of the world's tadpole experts in Mississippi, and we had a look at its internal and external anatomy and figured it out, and actually had a look, and some of the tadpoles have tiny eggs in their stomachs. So what we now know why they had fangs is that they live in very small tree holes in the forest, in the trees, and there's not a lot of food in there. So the mother actually comes back, lays unfertilized eggs in this little patch of water for her tadpoles, and they sort of use the fangs to grab the egg and suck it down. So frogs can make really good mothers.
Yes, I can imagine. Like the gastric brooding frog, which we've heard about. But last time we talked was about the region, and that is in a place which had been a war zone, is nonetheless turning out to be incredible for finding new species. In fact, we're about to hear from someone who's written a book about this. Are you still impressed by the fact that in this region you keep discovering new species of everything?
I am. I mean, it's amazing, both in terms of amphibians and even things like mammals that are still coming up. I mean, the saolar, the sort of Asian unicorn, wasn't discovered until recently, and a lot of it's got to do with the topography. There's really difficult landscapes with mountains, and that, for amphibians and smaller things, that increases the chance of speciation. Things get isolated on different mountain tops, so that makes it quite diverse. But from a discovery perspective, it makes it a challenge to find a lot of these things. So there's sort of different survey methods, even for mammals and saolars now. They're using things like leeches to collect the leeches and look for the blood of the animals they've been sucking off, because it's just so hard to find the animal itself.
And what are the prospects for looking after this region and its biodiversity?
I'm very hopeful that the biodiversity in Vietnam and in the region will be able to survive, but it's under a huge amount of pressure from population, from wildlife trade. It worries me greatly, and so part of what I do is try and document the diversity of the region while it's still there, and then hopefully we can at least prioritise where our conservation efforts should go, and also obviously training young Vietnamese scientists. But there's a large number now of really passionate, fantastic Vietnamese biologists in the new generation. It's just, I guess, it's a bit of a fight against time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Jodie Rowley from the Australian Museum, and do look up the Science Show website for her picture of that giant new tree frog. Looks so wise.